Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. This is Bonnie Kay, and welcome to the Straight Wives Talk Show.
This is the hard-hitting show that discusses the complexities of marriages between straight women to gay men. Each week, my guests and I discuss issues that affect over 4 million women in this country and millions more around the world who find themselves unknowingly married to a gay or bisexual man. If you have any comments that you would like to make during this broadcast, please feel free to send me an email at bonkaye@aol.com, that's bonkaye@aol.com. And tonight, without further ado, I'm so excited because my guest is a guest that most of us just wait for and hope for, who will be back with us, and that's Dr. Margalis Failstead. And Margalis, thank you so much for joining us, because now I'm so excited about your new book, and that's the announcement that I want to let everybody know, because on your other shows that when you were here, you had a wonderful, wonderful book, which was your first one, and, you know, your first book was about being a caretaker. I think all of us are very familiar with that particular subject, since most of us have that personality to start with, and it's a wonderful book. Once again, that many of us use as our Bible, Stop Caretaking, The Borderline or Narcissist, and How to End the Drama and Get On with Your Life. And that's how you and I first originally met, when one of our members told me that you did change her life, that nothing else was clicking until she read your book. She was really suffering, and she said after she read your book, that's when she was able to finally move on with her life. So I've been so appreciative about that book, and now waiting for the new book to come out, which you were kind enough to give me some insight into before it came out, and that's called Healing from a Narcissistic Relationship, A Caretaker's Guide to Recovery, Empowerment, and Transformation. So this is after you've already learned how to deal with being a caretaker. You know, now that you have all the steps, the next step is, how do you heal from this? You know, what's the recovery like? How do you transform yourself into being a non-caretaker and looking out for yourself first? So can you tell me why you wrote this second book? Was the first book inspiring you to do that, to take another step?
Well, it comes a lot from comments and questions that readers had sent in to me, and just the fact that I've observed that overall, most relationships with a very narcissistic person will end at some point. And that leaves a person who's been the caretaker often very confused and distraught, and their self-esteem is really low, and they really just can't figure out what happened, and it can take quite a while to recover from that. So this book really talks about how to start thinking in different terms about the relationship, how to empower yourself, and how to heal your self-esteem and really get refocused so that your focus is now on your life, not on the narcissist any longer.
We find that many of the men who marry the women in our group definitely fit the profile of a narcissist. And, you know, there's a lot of theories of nature over nurture, what, you know, the whole, you know, men versus women or whatever the case is. But when you live with someone who's a narcissist, it's just such an unhealthy feeling, because you always feel that you're running around like a guinea pig on a wheel, and you can never stop. You're never catching up with anything. You have to keep running and running and running to keep up with that person. Would you say that's pretty accurate?
Well, that's a good description. They are so focused on what they want to do, what they're thinking, what they're feeling, what they're going to do next, that you are, as a partner, always following around and trying to help them make that happen, or cleaning up the messes that happen when they hurt other people's feelings or leave people in the lurch, which narcissists often do.
So do you think a narcissist is born that way, or just develops that way, or opportunity turns that way from the family?
Well, I honestly think I think it's some of both. We do know that narcissists run in families. The research that has been done indicates that some of the narcissistic ways of thinking and emotionally responding seem to be inherited. But it also takes a lot of reinforcement from the family and the environment to create a full-blown narcissist.
And do narcissists ever change realistically?
Well, if they really understand that they're being narcissistic and hurting other people, they can learn to say and behave in different ways. But my experience talking to the spouses and the children of narcissists is that deep down they never really change. They are still focused on themselves, and it's always at the core of it a one-way street.
Mm-hmm.
Always towards the narcissist.
Do you think that they look for a certain prototype of a woman to be their mate?
Oh, absolutely. That's part of why I wrote the first book.
Mm-hmm.
Narcissists don't get along with other narcissists, and they don't get along with people that are willing to say, I think you're selfish and self-centered, and I don't want to have anything to do with you. And so those two groups of people are out. So they're looking for someone who will give in to what they want, who will put up with their need for control and their blaming and their emotional uproar. And people who will put up with that then become possible partners for them.
One of the things that you talk about in your new book is that when people come to you and ask you about identifying a narcissist in a relationship and if they'll ever change, one of the points that you mention is that narcissists create a glamorized false self or persona to show off to the world. And this image of superiority and friendliness is usually easygoing and sociable. When they set their sights on you, they turn on the charm, almost mesmerizing you with their solitude and attention. Sometimes they pull you in with their superior disdain for the conventional and mundane by appearing contemporary and edgy. You feel cool and exclusive to be included in this fantasy. I mean, and that is so true. And it says to the narcissist, the facade is everything. Who they appear to be, who they believe they are. They are totally immersed wholly and completely in their fantasy of themselves, and that's why they're so believable. So we shouldn't feel bad if we're taken in like that, right?
That's true. People get taken in by narcissists every day. They so totally believe in themselves, and they're so enthusiastic about their belief in themselves, and they always promise big results, and everything is wonderful and great, and it's very easy to get pulled into that. I mean, it's very enjoyable at the beginning to be included.
And very flattering, too. And
very,
I think they know how to hold...
You're the one that's being selected by this wonderful person.
And I think, I mean, I know it's not nice to say, but, you know, if we're talking realistically, a lot of times they look for women who are coming from broken situations or who are broken. So when women don't feel good about themselves, it's easy to flatter them and make them feel better. Am I right?
Yes, and I also find that many people who get hooked up with narcissists have had a parent or a close relative or a former relationship with a narcissist, and so they really feel it's kind of normal. It doesn't seem outrageous or strange to them either.
And that's so true, because a lot of the women in my group, when we have conversations in our support room, people mention that their mothers are narcissists or their fathers
mm-hmm.
were narcissists. So they really couldn't tell. That was their norm. So when they would meet somebody like that, that was the norm.
Right. And they're used to taking care of that kind of person emotionally. They're used to giving in, to flattering the person, to being willing to take the blame or the responsibility for things not going well. So they're
mainly
used to
because
it.
They've done it their whole life with their family, right?
Correct. Correct.
One of the things that you mentioned in this chapter also is how can you tell if a person is a narcissist? And you use the same test that I use. So funny. The duck test.
The duck test.
That's my favorite test. I usually say if it walks like a duck and it talks like a duck and it acts like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's not a goose. But like you
That's
say, I use the duck test. That is, if it looks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it probably is a duck. There's no physical blood test or MRI that can identify narcissism. Even therapists have to go on the behavior, attitudes, and reaction that a person presents to determine narcissism. So here are some of the symptoms and behaviors you should look for, and keep in mind that these do not all have to be present to determine narcissism. So one of the things I wanted to bring up before we talk about some of those symptoms, and tell me if I'm off on this. Some women tell me they go to therapists, like for couples counseling, and their husbands are such narcissists that these therapists are just so taken in by them, and they can't see it. They're believing the lies of the husband. Do you think that's a possibility?
Oh, it happens all the time. therapists, by and large, are not trained in their training programs to work with personality disorders. So it takes specialized training to work with borderlines and narcissistic people. And most therapists don't even recognize it. In addition, the narcissist works very hard the minute they walk into a therapy session to convince the therapist to be on their side. And they often project all of their own qualities onto their partner, and then the therapist is working backwards. They're thinking the partner is the narcissist and the narcissist is the healthy person. So people shouldn't be feeling foolish if they can't recognize a narcissist right off the bat, because most therapists can't either.
And I think that's an important point, because I've had women tell me that I believe some of these counselors, not all of them, of course, are tuned into this. And as soon as they approach the husband with an issue, he walks away and he says, I'm not going back there. She doesn't know what she's talking about. And that's just part of narcissism, right?
Oh, yeah. In fact, I think it's pretty typical that the narcissist will leave the therapy session by the second or third session. And never go back unless the therapist really fawns on them and tells them they're the healthy and wonderful person. But as soon as the therapist starts saying you have problems, then the narcissist is going to walk out.
And that's it. Then they don't want to go for counseling anymore, and you're left there, you know, looking for something that could never happen, because you can't even figure what went out. You know, that your husband's going to not come back, because as soon as somebody agrees with you or sides with you, he feels ganged up on.
Right.
So he doesn't want to go back. One of the things
That's
you said
right.
that really struck me was in this book was about splitting, that the narcissist's personality is split into good and bad parts, and they will also split everything in their relationships into good and bad. Any negative thoughts or behaviors they have are blamed on you or others, while they take credit for everything that is positive and good. They deny their negative words and action while continually accusing you of being negative. I mean, they just take it and they twist it around.
That's right. And that's what causes so much internal confusion in their family members. Narcissists will deny that they've said or done things that everyone saw them do. But the narcissist will stick to their story no matter what, and the rest of the family just walks around in confusion.
Mm-hmm. And this affects all aspects of the family, not just the wife, right?
Correct.
In other words,
yes.
And it's just not a narcissist to you. It isn't just the behavior they're using on you. They can be using it on their children, too, even though they're maybe using it differently.
Well, and often narcissists split the children in that good children and the bad child. And they'll favor one child over others, or they'll be much more punishing or demanding of certain children in the family. Those are other ways you can recognize this pattern.
And I think one more way, you can correct me if I'm wrong, that they might use it. I know that in my own personal case with my own father, he would try to split us against our mother, always making us feel that he's the parent who loved us and cared about us, and she really didn't.
Oh, yeah. They want you, they want the children on their side, and
right.
There's a lot of ways to do that. Like you say, splitting mom is bad and I'm good, or mom won't give you any money. She doesn't want you to have this, but I'll get it for you. There's always this underlying sense that the parents are not a partner or a unit. And the children have to choose.
Exactly. Divide and split. And divide. My father was always doing that. You know, he would always team us up against my mother. And even though she didn't even do anything wrong, he would say she did. because he had his own really bad problems of narcissism and sociopathy combined. So that was his method of doing things. I guess he needed our loyalty all the time and asked us to prove it. So one of the things that you mentioned is about narcissists not having any kind of empathy.
Right.
And
well,
can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah, sociopaths don't have any empathy. That is that they don't understand that other people have feelings at all. Narcissists see that you have feelings. They just can't read them very well. They really think that whatever they're feeling is what you're feeling. And if you don't feel the same way, then they're shocked and they tell you very quickly that you're wrong, that you have the wrong feeling. Because you're not seeing or experiencing things exactly the same way they are.
How about you write about their inability to be truly intimate. Can you talk about that for a moment?
Well, intimacy depends on your most vulnerable parts of yourself connecting with the vulnerable parts of another person. Narcissists never are vulnerable. The only times I've ever seen them vulnerable is if they're in the hospital, they've been injured physically, they've lost a job, they've been humiliated somewhere in public. And those times they may show some vulnerability, but they work hard to cover that back up. So narcissists, you never know what they really, really think and feel because they won't tell you, even if you're their marriage partner, even if they're your parent. They keep that all hidden. So there's no way that you can truly connect emotionally. It may appear that you are, but you may notice that later they'll have a whole different memory of your connective experience than you did, because they were having something else happen inside of them.
What I love about your book is that not only do you clearly outline every possible question somebody could have about narcissists, sociopaths, relationships, moving ahead, but you also have questions for reflection, which I think are so important. For instance, in this particular chapter, how do the behaviors of the person in your life compare to those presented here? What traits or behaviors attracted you to the narcissist in your life? Which of those traits or behaviors are still present on a daily basis in your relationship? What effect has the narcissist's blame and anger had on you? Has the narcissist's lack of empathy affected your relationship? And can you identify times when the narcissist completely misread or misinterpreted things you said or did? I mean, there's a whole list of things, and I think that's what's so interesting with this is that you can actually do some self-examination after you read this to make a connection of, yes, this is what was happening to me. And
I really tried to make this book include as much as I could from the questions I would normally ask a person in therapy, and to include exercises and questions and thought-provoking comments, so that a person could sit perhaps with a journal as they go through this and really go through this process of healing as they're reading the book.
Well, I think this book really does that. I mean, there's a chapter here in chapter 7, and I think this is just wonderful, techniques to let go. And I think this is such a hard thing where people, breaking up is hard to do. And especially when there's been years of emotional manipulation, there's still feelings of love based on whatever they're based on. I can't judge that. But relationships with narcissists frequently end no matter how hard you try to save them. You write that the end is often painful, exhausting, and generally upsetting. Whether or not your relationship ends, hangs together for months or years, or settles into a rhythm you can live with, you will need to learn to let go of the expectations, hopes, and dreams you had of how you wanted it to work. Changing your perspective, your presumptions, your reactions, and your strategies will reduce your frustration, emotional injuries, and general distress. Does anybody walk away from this unscathed? Would you say, Margalis, or you're going to be scarred in some way?
It seems to me the only people that walk away unscarred are the ones who don't have a second date. Even people who are just dating narcissists already are starting to feel the impact and starting to feel a little crazy themselves. They're either, swept off their feet and almost in a manic state, or they're crashing because suddenly all this new reality and information is coming into them and their experiences, and they're quite shocked with what they've really ended up with.
And I think that a lot of it is based on your own lack of self-esteem and self-worth, that you take on this responsibility. As you say, you have to quit being a caretaker. And you say a major part of being a caretaker in this relationship has been the requirement for you to be the nice one, for you to give in, for you to make things right, for you to deal with any problems and difficulties, and to spare the narcissist of any anxiety or upset. This role has to face some major overhaul. You have to stop taking care of the narcissist, and you will start focusing on caring for yourself. And this may be a challenge because you may find you don't have very many ideas about how to do that. And I think when people have been caretakers their whole lives, this is difficult, right?
Yes. Sometimes it's difficult for them to even know what kind of restaurant they like to go to or what movies they like. When you are so focused on another person and their preferences, you may not even have developed your own. So it may start at a very basic level where you start tuning in and giving attention and caring to yourself. And people often say, well, but I don't want to be selfish. Well, selfish is where you don't care about the other person. And people who get involved with narcissists are typically very, very overly caring. They care so much about the narcissist and what he or she is thinking and feeling that they really haven't tuned into themselves. So they're out of balance. And really what I'm looking to help people do is put yourself in the equation of caring. Your job in life is to take care of yourself. And then with your extra energy and with your extra love to give that to other people. But if you don't take care of yourself, well, who's going to do it? It's certainly not going to be the narcissist.
Well, that is for sure. One of the things that you write about in here is something that I address often with our group and our women about grieving. And you really hit it on the head because you say here pain, anger, and grief are all bound up together. Anger keeps the pain of grief and loss at bay until we're strong enough to bear it. Grief expresses our deepest pain, so we'll come out and be healed. Elizabeth Kubler-Ross says that we go through five stages of grief when we experience a great loss: denial, anger, bargaining, depression, and acceptance. In actuality, we circle through these stages round and around as we heal and slowly come to terms with the truth that our lives are changed forever. Owning and expressing your grief and allowing yourself to be fully aware of what you're feeling moves you from denial through hurt and anger, then the slow loss of hope as you try to fix everything in the relationship, and eventually on to acceptance that it's over. And one of the things you say is that what I keep saying, why these marriages are so hard to get over, it says in our very fast hurry up and get over it culture, there's an assumption that grief should last a couple of months and be done with it. However, it's important to keep in mind that you are mourning many losses when your relationship ends with a narcissist. You've lost a spouse, a lover, and a partner. You've lost the dream of what you believed your life would be like with that person. Your self-esteem has been damaged as a result of blaming and devaluation by the narcissist. You have probably lost property, money, and financial stability. Your confidence and self-independence has been shredded.
You may have lost half the time you used to spend with your children. You've lost your relationship goals. In addition, the narcissist is probably still hanging around, threatening to make your life miserable. And boy, did you hit that on the head. Like, one of the problems that our women have is that people do expect this immediate grief to be over. Like, after a couple of weeks, they say, like, why are you still upset at it? Get over it. You know, other people get over it. Why are you still hanging on to it? But once you, like you say, it's not just a matter of losing a relationship. In our particular relationships, many of our women really love their husbands. They have no say that the marriage is over. One day their husbands come to them, honey, I'm gay, and our marriage is over, without them having a clue of what was wrong in the marriage to start with, and now finding out this is happening, and you are at a loss. I mean, even the fact that you lose your children half the time when you've been a full-time parent, and you have to go to court, and you're told, well, you have equal sharing rights. So, I mean, these things are very upsetting, and I think it just takes a lot of time to get past it. Do you think so?
Oh, it takes so much longer than people in our culture expect it to take. I've heard some therapists say it can take as long as half the length of the relationship before you're really feeling healthy again. I don't think that's true for everybody, but it is a much longer process. And yes, other people, friends, relatives, they get tired of your hurt, your sadness, your inability to function. And they want you to get over it because it'll make their lives a little easier. But you have to go at the pace that works for you. And there are things that you can do, and I've put a lot of those in these chapters, to help move you through that process. But so often, I think in our culture, we kind of stamp down our grief and put on a happy face, and you know, people start dating again really fast, or they try and move to a new city or change everything in their life all at once, and it just becomes overwhelming because we're really not ready to do that. So processing through your grief, I think, is a very important part of the healing process.
You have a wonderful chapter after that called Healing Self-Esteem. And you talk about how you feel depends on what you think and believe about yourself and your situation and the resources you have available even more than the event itself. This chapter shows you how to repair the way you look at yourself and your situation to restore your confidence. And you say, you know, first thing you say here is you are not the cause. You may have thought the narcissist was going to make your life wonderful, and now you've found out it was just the opposite. You can still remember the good times, the feelings of everything going just right, of being the sole focus of the narcissist's attention. That's a heady feeling, very addictive. But the narcissist has two sides, and you don't get just one side. You always get both. You did not cause the narcissist to idolize you, nor did you cause the narcissist's current hostility, blame, and rejection. Those behaviors are entirely under the control of the narcissist, not you. Stop now taking responsibility for the narcissist's actions and begin paying attention to your own behaviors and focus on making choices about what you need and want to do to make your life better. Taking action helps you move out of the feeling of being a victim. And then you say you don't have to be a victim. Even though you felt victimized by the narcissist, you do not have to feel like a victim or act like a victim. The changing of your label of victim to the word disappointed, it's amazing how this change can do for you and think about your current situation. You know, even little things like that, just changing the way you talk. And you gave some examples here of the talk you should use. Like when you're a failure, you say, I'm a failure at relationships, and that's your self-belief because you feel like you failed that last relationship. Instead, you say, with disappointment, this relationship didn't work out the way I expected. So it's taking the blame off of you and putting it in a totally different perspective, right?
That's correct, yes. When we feel like a victim, we feel like we have done something wrong and we're being punished. And certainly, if you know your husband comes and says, "I'm gay. I don't want to be in this marriage anymore," that can feel enormously punishing. But it doesn't mean that you did anything to make that happen. People have their own path that they're going on, and when you find out more accurate information about where they're going, a lot of times we can say, "Oh, well, why can't I bring you back to my path where I thought we were?" But you can't do that. And so you have to find out, who am I and where am I going? So to heal your self-esteem, you do have to think about, how am I telling myself about what is going on here? And watching those inner messages. Because so often, especially people who are caretakers, we take the blame. We take the responsibility. And one of the reasons we do that is we can feel like maybe we might have control to change it. But we are not responsible for how another person decides to live their life, or however they were, you know, programmed to live their life. So we just have to deal with the reality. And that also means looking at ourselves in a realistic way, not putting ourselves down and not, you know, also shirking our responsibility to take care of our own selves. Because that is our job in life, to take care of ourselves and move on when we find out new information.
One of the things that, going back to self-talk, which I think is so important, because we are down on ourselves because we've been hearing negative messages for so long. And it's so interesting to read the difference between the way you put it, between discouraging self-talk and encouraging self-talk, that just by switching a few words around, it makes all the difference. And I'll just read a couple of them to you, to the audience. Like, instead of saying, "You know you are likely to fail," which is, you know, very negative connotation, already setting you up for failure, you can say in a positive way, "I can give this a try," which is a totally different thought process altogether. This one, instead of saying "you are a loser" to yourself, you can say, "I'm kind and considerate." Find two good traits about yourself, because everybody can find at least one or two. Another discouraging one is, "You can't get all of this done." You can say, "I can take one thing at a time." So you have to first change your inside messages to yourself and make them positive, because you've been listening to all these negative messages for so long that it's easy for you to feel this way about yourself. Wouldn't you say so?
That's very true. And if you grew up with a narcissistic parent, they've been telling you those negative things since you were born, in one way or another. And so the whole idea of reprogramming your own thoughts, it doesn't mean that you change your thought and you instantly believe it. It takes a long time. I mean, it took a long time to get to where you are, and it's going to take some work, attention, and time to move forward. But you do have control over what you're thinking, much more than you have control over how you feel. But how you think then impacts how you feel. So if you want to change how you feel, the fastest way to do it is start changing what your inner dialogue is with yourself, making it more positive, encouraging, reframing it, like those examples you just shared. I mean, they feel so different, and yet they are talking about the exact same behaviors and experiences.
One of the things that you also mentioned is that people should get a support system together. And I feel that's so important, where people can give you positive messages about yourself. Because if you've come from a family where there's narcissism and jumped into a marriage where there's narcissism, you know, that has been your norm. Now you have to look for a new norm. And the new norm is surrounding yourself with people who can find good things to say about you. And I know that I'm one of those people, because of, you know, suffering for years with low self-esteem until I got older, much older, very old.
But when people used to compliment me, rather than just saying thank you, I'd have to look for 22 excuses why they're saying that to me. Like they would say to me, oh, you have a beautiful new dress, and I would say, oh, yeah, but it really didn't cost very much. And, you know, like in other words, instead of just saying thank you, or if they say, oh, you look so pretty, well, that's because I went to the hairdresser, I did this and that. Instead of, you know, you just can't say thank you and accept a compliment. That some of us just feel that we're not worthy of that. And I see that a lot in women after living with narcissists.
Oh, definitely. And narcissists try very hard to cut you off from your support system anyway. They don't like your friends. They think your parents and your family are, you know, lower class or not acceptable in some ways. They tell you to quit your job so you can pay more attention to them, and then you have no support system. So connecting with other people is really important. One of the exercises that I share in the book is specifically aimed at building your sense of who you are by asking your friends and relatives to give you a list of your strengths so that you can start building a new picture of yourself. And based on what other people see in you, that those people that you can trust to tell you honestly the truth.
And I think that's an excellent idea as far as asking others, could you do me a favor? Just write down three things about me that you like. You know, you don't have to make it a long thing because they'll probably all have different things.
Right.
But, you know, it's a positive reflection of how others see you that you may not see in yourself.
Yeah, there
might
be things
that
you haven't thought about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so let's talk a little more about this. You know, you talk about embrace your emotional growth because that all comes with it. And when things are going well, you know, it says change precipitates emotional growth. Very little change happens when your life is going along happily and calmly. In fact, most people don't actually like change. Achievement disguises change by describing it as newer and better because humans usually resist change, especially if it comes suddenly and not of our own choosing like it happens to most of us. However, life, people, and circumstances are always changing. Psychological growth is often stimulated by changes that happen around you. If you can urge yourself to think of the change that is going on right now in your life as an opportunity for insight, growth, and personal understanding instead of a disaster, you will find you can use this time to move forward spiritually and emotionally, and you'll heal more quickly. And I know it's really hard in the beginning to say that, well, this is going to be really great learning experience. You know, I would never trivialize somebody's feelings like that. Not in the first, week or two. But as time goes on, I say the same thing, that you'll learn about strengths that you've never had within yourself. You'll learn all the different things you can do because you have to do them. No choices you have to make on your own. And you know, a lot of times it really works out better, although you can't tell that to somebody the first moment because they want to just knock you in the face. But it's really true that you can grow and learn from these experiences so that you become stronger and you learn for the next one. So that's my big question to you. Do people really learn from the next one? Or do they keep repeating the mistakes?
People do learn. And that doesn't mean we learn everything all at once. It means that we learn it piece by piece. And you may go through several relationships in your life, and each one will teach you something that's important for you. But our only option is to sit there and feel miserable and a victim, or learn something and move on. So I always choose to learn something and move on, and that always seems to bring better things into my life. So that's what I definitely recommend. But change is happening all the time. We never have 2 days that are exactly alike. But we keep thinking when things are going well, we want to keep it just the way it is. And when they're not going well, we want everything to be back to normal. But when a narcissist ends a relationship or your husband comes in and says he's gay, that changes things forever. And those have to be faced, whether you like it or not. So this book is really designed to help you face that with the most knowledge that I've been able to collect over about 30 years of being a therapist to help people move through this process.
Do you think that when you meet a narcissist and you fall in love with him and you marry him and you do struggle through the years because his real personality or that divided other side of him is coming out more so than the other one, the one you fell in love with, do you think that one of the reasons women hang in there so long is because they keep thinking that original impression is going to show up again and stay?
Well, definitely. Of course. That's the hope. Will happen is that really this person doesn't have two sides to their personality. They just have this good one and they're just having a bad day. But with a narcissist, they really are two personalities, two ways of looking at the world and interacting with you, and they alternate, and you don't just get one of them. You're always going to have both of them. And a lot of women do stay in these relationships waiting for the next time the narcissist is in a good place. But very often, as the relationship moves through the years, the narcissist is in a worse and worse place, and they are out in the world making friends or having affairs or whatever, and that's where they're putting their good energy, and the bad energy stays in their primary relationship because they know they can get away with it, essentially.
If
you'll stay, you'll put up with their hostility and their anger, and then they can project the good part outwards to the community and other people.
And I think that happens a lot. I see that so many times. Someone will tell me, well, people on the outside say how lucky I am, and they wish they were me, and I don't know how good I have it having such a wonderful husband like him, when in reality, you know, they want to say, well, you try living with him for a day or two, and let's see what you think.
Right.
Because that facade that they put on to everybody else is not what they're like when they're living with you. But in realistic terms, what do you think in a relationship, how long does it take until a narcissist realizes he has that kind of control over someone and starts becoming more of himself rather than just showing off?
Well, narcissists usually start showing that underside or that more negative side after they know the other person is committed to them. And that commitment sometimes is the engagement, sometimes it's the marriage ceremony, sometimes it's when the first child is born. But most of my clients over the years can point to the day or the short time period where they saw that switch happen, and that negative part of the narcissist then showed up. And after that, it's there off and on from then on. So it has to do with them being sure that you are committed and loyal to them.
And a lot of this is a control issue, wouldn't you say so?
It's totally control. They want to control what other people think about them because they need to appear perfect and glorious and fabulous, and they cannot tolerate any imperfections in themselves.
And they can build up a big support group that makes you feel inadequate. Because other people are saying, well, it must be you because we seem totally different, which only makes you more confused, right?
Well, it does. People don't believe you if you tell them how the narcissist acts in the privacy of your home. They just don't even believe you. They think that
you're making it up.
Exactly.
And then, of course, the narcissist is very fast to tell other people there's something wrong with you. And also, you know, all the gaslighting, or in our community, I call it gay lighting,
where people won't try to make you think you're crazy because you're thinking a certain way. So it's really based on a lot of self-doubt. If you keep digging a hole in somebody, they're going to start, you know, falling into it. And if you hear negative messages enough, you're going to start believing them. Even if you don't think they're true in the beginning, if you hear it enough times and repeat it over and over and over and over again, you're going to start saying, well, you know, maybe I did cause it. You know, he wasn't this unhappy before. Maybe I'm doing something wrong. Do you find that happening too?
Oh, certainly, certainly. And the narcissist seems so sure and so positive that they are right, that it's very hard to combat that. And like you say, when you, it's a form really of brainwashing, where you are trained to think the way the narcissist thinks, and you start thinking of yourself in those less than terms.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what I think this book is so great as far as helping women put their lives back on track, because a lot of times you feel very lost and you feel that I don't know how I'm ever going to get back to who I am, because you really do lose yourself. I mean, that's your reality. You lose yourself in these marriages and you become someone who you weren't when you started. And this guide and this book that you have is a real true guide so that you don't have to walk this path alone. And I want to tell people about some of the other support that you have, Dr. Felstad, as far as you have a monthly newsletter, right?
Correct.
Which is really excellent, where you put in your own articles and other resources. And also you have your two books. I mean, people can really arm themselves. Women can really protect themselves.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
No, I'm serious. And can you tell them the best way to reach you?
You can reach me by...
At your website.
My website, which is margalistherapy.com. And also send me emails at margalistherapy@gmail.com.
If you go to the margalistherapy.com, you'll get to see about, you know, that you can read your blog on there, right?
Correct.
So.
I also have an online class to help people recover from being a caretaker. They can find out information about that. The newsletter, and I also do phone consultations for people as well. So there's a lot of ways to connect with the material that I'm doing. And I have a blog on Psychology Today, and I'm also doing a blog on soulfulfillinglove.com.
I'll have to check that one out.
Soulfulfillinglove.com? Yeah. Soulfulfillinglove.
Okay, so you really have a lot of different ways to reach you. This is very interesting, too. So you have a blog on here or a column on here?
Yeah, I'm becoming one of their regular writers.
That's wonderful. So you can really have a bunch of us stalking you out in the community.
And if someone wants to get my newsletter, they can just send me an email, and my letter goes out at the beginning of every month. So this is a good time to get on the newsletter list.
Yes, and if you need any help with that, you can always just write to me at bondk@AOL and say, please hook me up with Dr. Felstad, because I know sometimes it's hard for people to get the right spelling here, but I'll definitely put it in our upcoming newsletter to remind people again about the book and about the newsletter and about your, you know, services that you do where you can counsel by phone. So for anyone who's having any problems as far as being with someone who's unhealthy for you, Dr. Felstad is the woman who can really change that for you and help you move forward in your life, because it's really easy to get stuck when you're living with a narcissist or a sociopath and you just don't know which way to turn, who to go to, and where to start putting borders up so that you can stop caretaking. I mean, I think that's a natural tendency for many of us. Do you have any other final words of wisdom for our women?
Just keep loving yourself. Keep reminding yourself that you're your own best caretaker, and put those wonderful caretaking skills to work on taking care of your physical, emotional, and spiritual life. Because everyone around you will benefit from your doing that. And I want to thank you, Bonnie. I love coming on your show, and it's always a joy to hear your insights as well. And I know you do so much.
Thank you so much. And, you know, you're our favorite guest here. People just wait to hear you. So I'm hoping you'll do us a favor in the fall and come back again. We can talk
All right, sure.
So to all of our women, I want to thank all of you for listening this week. Remember, you can go to my website at gayhusbands.com if you want to ask a question that's legal or medical. You get a free question at justanswer.com, our great resource center. And also sending a shout-out to Scott, my nephew, who always listens to the show and loves you, Dr. Felstad. He just is really enamored with you. So we're shouting out to you and to all the women who are hurting. It's time to start healing. And the best way to heal is to buy this book, because this is the next step. So many of you have bought the other book, you know, the Stop Caretaking book. So this is your next step to move on so that you can have a healthy and more fulfilling life. It's on Amazon. Where else? Is Barnes & Noble also?
No, it's just on Amazon.
It's on Amazon.
And local libraries. And it's also, they're putting it out in hardback and in audio format right now. So probably next year. Yes. And so probably paperback will come next year. So those are the ways you can access it.
Right. So if you have an Amazon reader, you can get it that way as an ebook. So
correct.
I want to thank you so much again. I love having you, and I wish you a healthy, happy summer, and I'll be talking to you again before the fall.
Thank you, Bonnie.
All right. Take care, and good night, everybody.